Greetings, you're listening to Rebels Remembered, featuring Caitlin DeFord and Kelsey DeFord.
Greetings, travelers across the galaxy. I am Caitlin.
I am Kelsey.
And this is episode 14 of Rebels Remembered, and we are discussing Rebel Resolve, which aired February 23rd, 2015. The synopsis reads, the Rebels attack an Imperial courier in hopes to glean information that would help lead them to a dangerous rescue attempt. It was written by Charles Murray, who we haven't seen his name since Path of the Jedi, and Henry Gilroy, and it was directed by Justin Ridge. I'm glad you wrote this note because his name sounded familiar to me. He was executive producer for Star Wars Resistance. And he also provides the voice for Bucket, and he was also an episodic director and storyboard artist for The Clone Wars. So it's interesting we get him coming in to direct. I think he might have been, I'm not sure if he's directed other episodes of Rebels. I think I'm thinking of the two Lees.
Yeah, that's Stewart and Steven.
Steven. Okay, I'm thinking of another, I guess I've seen his name, but I'm thinking of another Justin or something. I don't know, maybe there isn't another Justin, I don't know. So, last episode, was put a kind of a, not really a downer, but more, well, was kind of a downer, but it ended with Ezra's transmission of a message of hope, but Kanan has been captured. So, we're getting close to the season one finale, and this episode is more or less about what do we do next now that Kanan's been captured.
I will say, I don't recall, I want to say when this originally aired, it aired as a standalone, but then after the season finale came out, which is another 22-minute, 30-minute episode, they ended up pairing those two together and collectively calling it Fire Across the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. I always got confused. I was like, wait, wasn't it supposed to be part one? And it kind of is in a way, but it's just not called Fire Across the Galaxy Part 1, Part 2. Mm-hmm. It actually has just a standalone name of Rebel Resolve.
Well, also, like, the name Rebel Resolve is like the resolve of and the strength of
continuing on when even though it's hard.
Which is a pretty overarching theme throughout this episode. But yeah, interestingly enough, I believe every single finale of Rebels is a two-parter, except this one.
Okay.
So season two, we get to Twilight of the Apprentice, part one and two. Season three is Zero Hour, part one and two.
Okay.
Four, I think four has two different names.
Dowels.
But it's still technically
a two-parter,
I guess. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But I know this one is definitely, it's not a one and two-parter thing. Mm-hmm. It could be if you put them together.
Yeah.
But this episode immediately jumps into Ezra and Sabine and Zeb stealing or trying to get inside a walker. So from the get-go, there's no setup. It's just right into, which season one has been known for through some of these episodes. It just starts right into the action.
And honestly, when I first, even during the rewatch, it's like, what are they doing again? Like, I forgot. It's like, oh,
I did too.
They're trying to get information on where Kanan's at. But I don't know, it started, I was like, wait, why are they attacking a walker?
Walker!
Which, is this the first time that Ezra pilots the walker or controls it?
I think so.
Because he didn't control it in Breaking Ranks. That was,
no, he didn't. It was, yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. It's one of the first times Ezra's controlling the walker. Yeah, what they're doing is they're using Chopper to get into the walker and plug into the system to see if they can get a list of, you know, prisoner logs or anything to show them if there's, you know, because Kanan's a prisoner now. Mm-hmm. Trying to find his exact whereabouts or where he's located. Unfortunately, though, which I kind of forgot too until we rewatched this episode, I can't remember if it was Sabine or Zeb or whoever mentions, well, they blew up their own communications tower, so
there's not really much communication.
There's not much we can dig up now because there's no communication going on, you know, that they know of, because their big antenna is gone. Which kind of calls back to the last episode. But yeah, I forgot. Like, why are they on a walker? And what are they doing? Like, so as we're trying to get information, they realize, okay, this whole plan's moot, you know. And Sabine's like, just forget it. I got her on the way to come pick us up. And she picks them up. And, of course, the one left, bless his heart, little astromech heart, is Chopper. He's still trying to dig to find anything about Kanan. And Zeb has to go get him, which I think is interesting. Shows throughout this episode, it shows that Chopper
deep down really cared for Kanan.
Yeah, really
cared.
Even
though he sold him and he was, you know, a butt to Kanan in a lot of episodes. I think that, you know, because outside of Hera, I think he's known Kanan the longest after her.
True.
Because he was the second person to join the team.
Yeah, it says Zeb leaps back to the walker and grabs the droid just before it is destroyed. Also interesting about this episode, you know, I think we've mentioned this before, Kanan and Hera are kind of the two leading members of the crew. So it's interesting to see, I don't want to call them the kids, but Sabine, Ezra, and Zeb's dynamic when there's mm-hmm. no one else in charge, mm. so to speak.
Yeah.
Like there's a part where Zeb's in the way and of the walker, and Ezra's like, I can't see, move, you know, and then Sabine's like, just forget it, I got hair. I like, they're
like
kind
the
of...
part where he's like, they basically use Zeb as the rear cannon. And Sabine's like, this thing doesn't have a rear cannon. It's just Zeb trying to shoot him. Mm-hmm. The walkers that are, other walkers that are chasing them.
So it's almost like, I don't want to say they're failing, because they are still working together. It's just kind of, their dynamic is interesting, because it's almost like there's no one leading.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, we're all just...
Winging it
here. Like,
but also you would have to improvise on the fly when, okay, obviously what we came for is not here, so we gotta figure out how to get away from the
that's true, they are good at, okay, well that's gone, so what's the next plan B, what's plan C, what's plan D, like, I think they're good at that aspect, but I don't know, I found it humorous, their little banter without Kanan or Hera,
yeah,
to kind of guide them, be like, kids, we're doing this. You do this, you do this. It's kind of like they're, like you said, they're just winging it.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. This might be later, but I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, it is later.
Okay, never mind. I was going to say, before we get to it, I completely forgot Tarkin was in this episode still, which makes sense why he's there. Because I went into it going, if Tarkin's not in this episode, that doesn't make sense. Because, like, he has to follow through what he was... He has to, like, figure out what Kanan... knows. So when I saw him, I was like, oh good, he is here, so he can kind of...
I think I did too. I was thinking we weren't going to see him until the finale, but then I realized, oh no, there's some moments in here.
But
with
now
him
I'm and... like, he's in the finale, right?
Yes.
Okay. I knew he was in the finale, but for some reason, I couldn't remember him being in this episode until he showed up.
I mean, there's a few short scenes between him and Kanan and Inquisitor. And...
Yeah.
But yeah, like you, I was like, oh, that's not till the finale. I was like, oh, so like you, I was like, oh, we're getting the scenes here with Tarkin. Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, it wouldn't have made sense if he wasn't there.
So after Hera swoops in and gets him out of there, it cuts to a scene with her talking with Fulcrum. And I want to say this is the first time we see...
I think so too.
Fulcrum. Now, you don't see... their face, you don't see what they look like, you just see kind of a hood, and it's like a
hologram projection.
Right, so you don't really, but it's interesting, it's the first time we see this person.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically tell Hera it's too risky to go after Kanan, you know, you gotta think of the safety of your crew. And I love how this they say, there's an overarching mission.
That's the first time I think we've heard that as an
and
audience.
We've never heard that as an audience. We're like, wait, what?
Because, I mean, even Fulcrum says, your mission was to lay low and hide, you know, from the Empire. And basically what you did was announce yourself to, you know, sort of outing yourself as being part of the rebellion rather than kind of doing things from the shadows. But yeah, I think as an audience member that when I watched, it's like, oh, what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't comprehend the fact that Hera was taking orders from someone else. But she... It's kind of hinted that the Fulcrum has been a contact of information, but I don't think there's ever been orders coming from Fulcrum.
Right.
Until this episode.
They are like, Fulcrum at this point has been a source of information, a source of intel to help them. They're also working against the Empire, but yeah, until this point, it was like, oh wait, there's a hierarchy.
Right, and I didn't catch this through just now, but even Hera says, well, it was Kanan's idea to use the transmission to be a hope for the people, so, which tells me, as an audience member, Kanan doesn't know this other mission either. So,
and she tells Fulcrum he wanted to inspire hope to the people. So even he doesn't know or hasn't heard of this overarching mission.
Well, stay low for now. Yeah. I mean, you can kind of mess with the Empire, but like, don't be like, you know, poster children for, or,
yeah, right.
You know,
you kind of, it explains so much why in season two they're being hunted as they are.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. of stuff that happened in one. Mm-hmm. I think one, they kind of grow as, they're kind of this ragtag bunch, but they grow into, oh no, they're a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to pester
right.
something, but to, like, full out disrupt operations and build up, basically call for rebellion, and in the eyes of the Empire, that's sedition and
right.
all kinds of stuff. But yeah, that told me that, oh.
Well, it's interesting, after she tells Hera, you know, don't go searching for Kanan, he may, you know, it's too risky, you're gonna risk. And I love how they say, for the sake of the mission and the sake of Ezra. Interestingly, she brings up Ezra.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, they bring up Ezra because they say if Ezra and Kanan are captured, if they're both captured, mm-hmm. that's the end of that whole.
Right.
Which kind of hints that Fulcrum knows about them being Jedi.
Jedi, yeah. But it's so sad to see, because Hera deeply cares for Kanan.
Yeah.
And we only get this one moment after this transmission where she kind of sits down, she kind of puts her hand to her head, like, what do I do? And it's all, we haven't really seen Hera in that
state of. I'm hearing what you're saying, but I don't know if I myself can go through with what you're asking.
We've seen her take charge and be hopeful, and we never really seen her go, this is hard for me.
Yeah, and I don't know what to do. Like, that's a different side of her we haven't seen.
But after that, she immediately, right after that, that's the only moment we get of her vulnerability. And right after that, she goes to the crew and says, we can't go looking for Kanan. Fulcrum says it's too risky. It's like a totally different than when we just left her.
Right. It's almost like playing the part of the leader, can't let emotions get in the way. And even, I think Ezra checks her on that when she's like, we can't sacrifice the mission for one soldier. Like, she doesn't even call him Kanan. He's just a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And Ezra's like, no, he's family, which kind of like checks her into being like, that kind of mentality might work for the Empire, but for the Rebellion, I feel like it's a little bit different, but it depends.
But also, it makes me wonder if Hera referred to him as soldier to make it easier on her.
Yeah, I can see that being a thing.
Like, okay, well, if I don't refer to him as a friend or family, it's easier for me to just say, well, that, you know, he sacrificed himself for us, and, you know, I think she says it that way.
Yeah, and it's almost like her trying to vocally rationalize why they can't go after him.
Because
even she says, if we go after him, it kind of like we talked about this the last episode. If she had saved Kanan, that would defeat their mission. They would all been captured.
Right.
They would not have been able to get the transmission out. So even she tells Ezra, like, if we go after him, that defeats his sacrifice.
And it definitely defeats his sacrifice if they're captured and killed.
Yeah, exactly. But I think especially for Ezra, again, playing back into the fears that he felt in the last episode about losing his family in a similar kind of way.
Right.
It's obviously hard for him.
And interesting that he's attached to the Ghost Crew as he has. I mean, we already kind of mentioned that last episode, referred to them. That's what my new family. He refers to them as family.
Last episode.
So, of course, Ezra in particular, he doesn't like what Hera's telling him, of course, and it cuts to this scene where Chopper goes into Kanan's.
Chopper killed me, Miss. Oh, it's so sad. I forgot about that part.
He goes into Kanan's bunk and he's sad. Yeah. And then Ezra's like, I miss him too, buddy. But I'm gonna get him back, and do you want help? And of course, Chopper, like, beeps or whatever. But yeah, that was kind of like, oh, he has a heart underneath all that metal. He cares. So we cut to back in the Ghost, and Ezra calms Sabine and says, hey, I need some more cells for my lightsaber. I can't find them, whatever.
Yeah, power cells.
And she, of course, nudges Zeb and was like, hey, follow me, you know. And they're little. I mean, this kind of shows their teamwork a little bit.
Yeah.
Chopper, like, plugs into, Hera wants him to do something, I can't remember exactly, but he, like, overloads the comm unit so it makes this buzzing sound, I guess, so it can't detect that Ezra, Zeb, and Sabine are taking the Phantom away, because she probably would catch that and be like, what are you doing? But it's also the first time that we see, when Zeb says, wait, you're disobeying Hera's orders. And then I think, is it Ezra or Sabine says, were they orders or just suggestions?
Like her opinion.
Her opinion, yeah. I'm like, okay.
Okay, kids. Make it a loophole. So that's kind of funny, like sharing that like parental, you know, relationship.
Right. It's kind of like, well, did they really say that? Did they really mean it this way? You know.
Kind of twisting it to suit your own end.
Yeah. Of course, their plan works. You know, Hera's kind of distracted by Chopper, but then she kind of, before we, catches you know, on. When the Phantom takes off, she kind of looks at Chopper and is like, wait, you're up to something, because they have that relationship, close relationship, too. So after this, they take the Phantom, they leave. This is where we cut to the Inquisitor and Kanan and Tarkin. Oh, man, one of my favorite lines from Kanan comes in this scene, where, you know, they've tried, you know, mind probing him and
well,
all
they
this
used
stuff.
The interrogator droid,
yep.
And that's when, because again, Tarkin doesn't think this dude's a Jedi. I don't see why he can't, because the dude had a lightsaber when they got him, they kidnapped him. Anyway, he doesn't believe it, because he's just, you know, overconfident and everything. And, like, even the Inquisitor's like, dude, this mind probe ain't gonna work on this
work
dude.
Work on him, yeah.
Because he's a Jedi.
And then he, like, tries to, like, what is it he says? A Jedi still feels pain. And you think, I mean, maybe Kanan was being tortured at this moment? Like, what do you call that? Like, not mind meld. It's called something.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, like he put his hands up, and obviously Kanan was feeling some sort of discomfort. I'm like, do you know what he was doing to his, like, he was invading his mind? Like,
it's something kind of like that.
That's what I was thinking.
And you think maybe he, I mean, obviously he was kind of being tortured at this moment, but then he says, what do you see? Thinking like, oh, I've got him now. I'm going to break him. And then Kanan replies, I see you growing more and more frustrated. And I love the way Freddie Prinze Jr. delivers that line. It's like, nah, JK. Like, you can torture me all you want. And eh.
But it was also kind of like, oh, I can get in your mind just as much as you can get in my head. Like, so, yeah. Like, kind of like you're saying, like a mind meld.
But I don't know if, like, Kanan really didn't feel anything, or it was just, you know, how Kanan can be kind of, like, macho-y, like, eh, you know. So during all this is when, actually, does that happen later? Do we come back to them in this? Okay, yeah, we come back to them. Okay, I'll save that for later.
But I will say, like, after that, I feel so bad for Kanan. He's like, he gets kidnapped. He's obviously, like, in a cell. There's no bathroom nearby, obviously. Gets interrogated by a interrogator droid. I don't know what that sensation's like. Gets his mind basically messed with. And then he gets electrocuted.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're trying everything.
Like, dang.
I mean, it's the Empire. They're gonna... You don't want to get captured by them. but yeah, I think it's interesting you said Tarkin still doesn't believe. He's like,
Yeah.
He's a Jedi. What does he say? The Jedi he claims to be?
Dude, he had a lightsaber.
I mean, just because you have a lightsaber. We're not going to get into that.
That causes hurt feelings with some people. Oh, where are we at? I'm sorry. The plot.
Oh. Back on Lothal, Ezra heads to the team's last resort, Visago, who we have not seen for quite some time. He claims to know nothing of Kanan's whereabouts. And then, you know, Ezra kind of has this moment of, do you ever wonder why, you know, people are always after Kanan? And then at this point, I mean, it's always been a secret that Kanan was force sensitive and used to be part of the Jedi Order until he outed himself in episode 1.
Yeah.
Or episode 2. But it's still almost, I think it's interesting when Sabine tells Ezra, like, don't tell him, because it's almost still, they're still protecting that secret even though Kanan's been captured.
Well, also, Visago wasn't around when Kanan revealed himself as a Jedi.
Well, I know that. I just think it's interesting that there's still this secretive about it. Ezra tells him that Kanan's a Jedi. Of course, he doesn't believe him until he levitates a crate over his head. Visago leaps to safety and agrees to exchange information for whatever form of payment he asks. Ezra has no other choice and succumbs to Visago's terms.
I do think it's interesting that you also kind of see from Visago's point of view that in his mind, these rebels that he's dealt with a couple times, but he said that they've kind of make it difficult for him on Lothal now. He really started to see the Empire kind of tightening their grip because they exist on Lothal. Obviously, with the communication tower out of commission, and they know they exist now. They've always known they exist, but to be that level, that omega level threat now or something, that you start to see the Empire kind of close in on Lothal a little bit.
So we went, like I said, same thing I said earlier, is we went from a ragtag bunch of rebels to, they're really starting to tighten their grip on this little planet of Lothal. So you can totally tell the character development of the crew as a whole unit and how much they've
posed a threat to the Empire.
Yeah.
What did you think about Ezra outing himself and Kanan as Jedi to Visago of all people?
I didn't really understand why he did it.
Well, I think he says something like, so you can have leverage and you owe a Jedi something.
Oh, okay, I see why. Because the way Visago works is...
But...
Yeah.
I just don't know. Hera says in the episode about... one of the episodes Visago's in, she actually says Visago would sell his own mother for a couple credits.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know he won't do that to Ezra and Kanan?
We don't.
That's what I'm like. So I guess, like... I personally don't understand it, but also he's incredibly desperate and needs help.
That's the thing, too. I don't think I really understood it either, but, I mean, he does say it's their last resort. So I don't think he would have done it if not for the circumstances. And he's also kind of playing Visago, too.
Yeah.
You have a Jedi and you've... Like, he's kind of using his using that as a way to convince him
to get information about
scratch my back, I'll scratch your back.
Yeah.
And I don't think he could have done that if he's like, hey, I could owe you something, and I'm just a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of using that Jedi word and even showing, demonstrating, hey, look what I can do.
Yeah.
You can use me, you know? So, yeah, I didn't really understand it either, but at the same time, like you said, desperation, desperate times call for desperate measures.
Even dealing with that guy.
Visago tells Ezra that since the destruction of the tower, they have been using courier droids, which are these little, I don't know how to describe them.
They're just tall, they're skinny choppers. They're tall choppers that take information from the planet. They go on cruise ships, and then they are basically in orbit and beam out information to other nearby ships.
Which is funny, they've resorted to that because they blew up their own tower.
Yeah. But I mean, to Tarkin, that's just a small price to pay for getting rid of a transmission.
True.
Although they waited technically until the transmission was over. I still don't understand that.
Like, wait, let's hear what this kid has to say.
Let's hear what he has to say.
Before we blow it up.
Yeah.
Visago asks, after he tells Ezra this information, he asks for nothing in return, ... yet.
Do we ever come back to that?
Yes, we do.
Oh, crap.
We come back to it. So, after this, Ezra, you know, leaves Visago. I love this. The way this scene is set up is like, guys, I figured something out. I know how we can, and then you don't see Hera, and then Zeb ends up being kind of part, and there she is. It's like, oh, heck. She's angry with Ezra's recklessness, but agrees to go along with the plan. So she's like, you disobeyed my orders, and I love this scene between her and Ezra, where same thing he did to her earlier, like, he's not a soldier, he's our friend. He said, look, Zeb and Sabine and I agree, and we don't want to give up on Kanan. And then she turns around like, you think I do? And then Ezra responds, no, I don't. That's why.
It's like, this is giving you an out. This is, you know, helping you without Fulcrum or whoever, you know, even if they're not allowing you to do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then we cut back to Kanan still being tortured with, like, electrocution. And Tarkin, they still haven't gotten nothing out of this man. And Tarkin says they need to move him, quote, to a new location, quote, one that never fails to extract a confession.
Yeah, and I do wonder, it does seem in this scene that, I don't know if it's because the Inquisitor is a Jedi, maybe more, he's not a Jedi, he's a Sith, but obviously, it's confusing about how a Sith became a Sith, but obviously in tune with the dark side of the Force, but he seems to be more intuitive into Kanan. Because, you know, as Tarkin's like, well, we gotta get information out of this guy. And the Inquisitor's like, he might not know anything. Like, have you ever considered that? And he's like, yeah, you're probably right, but let's move him anyway.
Just to be sure.
Just to be absolutely 100% sure.
Speaking of that, we skipped over it in the beginning of the episode when they're like, I don't understand. I think Sabine and Zeb are talking about Kanan and what they could, they're gonna torture him for our secrets, blah blah blah. And then Hera interludes with, he doesn't know anything.
But she says it so softly.
But it also calls back to what episode? It calls back to Out of the Darkness when she's talking to Sabine and says, that way, if you're captured, you can't reveal what you don't know.
Whoa, I just realized that tied to that episode.
She said, so you know what you need to know, and that's it. Dang. And this, and now here is the moment where it's like, it's
playing out.
Oh, like this that is why.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
But yeah, the way she delivers that is just, it's so sad.
Because, you know, her, it's like, she knows he's being tortured.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for it, because, I mean, not saying there's ever a reason for torture, but, like, they're not going to get any information because he doesn't know anything.
So they head back to the Thal. And this is where they try to get one of the courier droids, and they're going to get it and send Chopper in his place. Chopper, who is now undercover, plugs into the Imperial Light Cruiser, and the officers see no data, but notice Chopper is downloading communication logs, which he is not authorized to do so. Before they can check him, the droid sends a signal to the Ghost. So this is the moment where they, basically it's like, we get a courier droid, we switch him with Chopper, then we go back in after Chopper gets information and get him out. So Chopper is kind of the star of this little mission. So they swoop in and save Chopper. One of my favorite moments is when he goes in the
blast
ship.
Blast off, basically.
Well, before he blasts off, okay, he opens that airlock, and then all the stormtroopers just fly out.
Yeah, and I'm like, those guys aren't okay.
They're fine. They just needed some air. It's okay. Chopper soars through space in tandem with the Ghost and finally reconnects with his friends.
And I mentioned it when we were watching it, when he's like, he's like, he blasts off, and then he like catches up with the ghost, and then he tries to go into the little airlock, because I think the ghost is upside down.
Yeah, it kind of rotates.
And his little claw is so cute when it tries to grab on the little ladder thing.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he has little arms.
I mean, you've seen his arms before, but I don't know, something was so cute about that little pincher reaching out. Like, oh, is he gonna make it?
Also, I gotta bring into the fact the courier droid that they took in. I felt so bad for that little guy.
Yeah, and he helped Zeb. He put the little fire out.
Yeah, when he was... What caught fire? I'm still confused there.
I don't know. I know the ghost got hit a little bit, like three or four times. And then he was like, I need some help. He's like, I need help back here. And there's like a little bitty fire going on.
And then the little cure droid put it out.
Yeah.
So when Chopper gets back, he's like, way to go, Chopper. You know, you got the dad and everything. But then Zeb's like, and this little guy helped us too. And like, I think we're going to keep him.
And then it has that little moment of... They're smiling, Ezra's smiling, Zeb's smiling, Sabine's smiling, and she hits her little wristband and closes the little airlock, and then Chopper has to be a murder bot and kill the thing. Well, not kill him, just push him out of the
Speaking of
ghost.
That, I have to mention this. On Rebels Recon, I remember the Rebels Recon of this episode, which you can still find on YouTube. One of the questions fans asked Dave Filoni was, what happened to that droid?
Oh, I didn't think about that. Well, we saw a Lothcat next to it.
And he said... He's just gonna hang out with a Lothcast till his battery dies.
Oh,
rip.
But on the other hand, that would be, you know, well, depends on if they're good cats or bad cats. It'd be a nice way to live your life, you know. You don't have to take orders from nobody anymore. Just chill with Lothcats as long as they don't hurt you.
Until your battery dies? Mm-hmm. Maybe someone will find him and repurpose him for something useful.
Yeah. Maybe Lando's still on the planet somewhere. It'll find him. Like, I could use this guy.
But I thought it was funny someone asked that question. So they get Chopper back in the ghost, and they're scanning all the data he's collected. And they finally reveal, it's revealed, this whole episode we're trying to figure out where the heck Kanan is. We know he's on a ship, obviously. And it said that he's on Tarkin's Star Destroyer, the Sovereign, but it's leaving for the Mustafar system. I think Sabine's the one that tells everyone that information.
Yeah.
And Hera's only heard the name of the planet once from Kanan. It's where Jedi go to die. So, question. And we never really touch upon this because the way the season ends. What do you think happens to Jedi when they go to Mustafar?
As someone who's not well-versed in... I know the original trilogy. But my knowledge on what happens to Jedi after Order 66 is very limited. I don't know what happens to survive. I mean, we have one instance of Luminara. Her bones are being used. But anyone else is either Obi-Wan. He goes into hiding. But as someone that's actually captured,
It's never revealed that I know of what happens
to
them.
I would have to, like, go to Wikipedia.
Wait. Oh, man, I didn't think about this. Where's Vader's lair?
What do you mean his lair?
Okay, so in, like, I don't know if it's Legends or New Canon or something... It's, like, called Vader Castle. Have you been aware of this?
No, but I've loved to hear more.
Hang on. Let me make sure I'm reading this right. This might be something
Vader Castle?
I'm saying that completely wrong. Hang
what?
On.
What?
I think it's located at Mustafar, if I'm not mistaken. Now that I think about that. If it is, I'm about to freak out.
Well, I know Mustafar is obviously where Anakin became Vader. Because it's where he got burned really bad. That's where the fight was.
Okay, yeah, forces...
Oh, Fortress Vader.
Fortress Vader, also known as Darth Vader's Castle, was a fortress located on Mustafar. So, oh my god, were they about to deliver him to Vader to get a confession?
I don't know. I mean, that would make sense. But, I would have to have more confirmation into, like, what did Tarkin mean by he said...
What was the... One that never fails to extract a confession.
Like, I would need more information on what that means.
Maybe because it's Vader.
I've never heard of Fortress Vader.
I didn't
Is this
either.
Like a new thing?
No, well, I mean, it was first, I think, brought up in Rogue One, I think.
Oh.
And which I've never seen. But also, it was, I believe, don't quote me on this, I think it's in Fallen Order. Okay, it was discovered in the Darth Vader comic series by Charles Soule, published in 2017. So that was after this. Over time, more and more secrets and details have gradually been unveiled about his castle, including its proximity to the Empire's other dark fortress for its inquisitors on the moon of Nur. But yeah, whether or not...
I don't know, we just get that cryptic line from Tarkin, and I mean, I would assume it would be Vader, but... Because we've already got an Inquisitor who's failed to get a confession out of him, so...
But I also find it interesting that, you know, he says Mustafar, and when I first heard this in watching it, the only thing I knew about Mustafar was that where Anakin met his fate. Yeah. That's where
that's
got,
the only thing I knew.
You know, got burnt up and everything. That's the only thing I knew, so I'm going... Okay, like, how we just mentioned Vader's castle. He made that his base of, like, where he basically... Well, I guess that's where Vader was born.
It's his vacation home, you know? And it obviously has special meaning to him. But, yeah, my question is also something that we're obviously not going to get answered in the series is, how did Kanan come to know about Mustafar being the place where Jedi go to die? Yeah. Where did he hear the information from?
That's interesting. Was that just something that he learned, or... It's also very symbolic that Anakin basically died there, symbolically.
A fallen Jedi, and now other Jedi are being sent there to be possibly killed.
Executed.
Executed.
So when I first heard it, I was like, oh, that's the only thing I knew.
I just thought it was symbolic. I thought it was just a call back to the prequel trilogy. That's where that fallen guy, you know, became Vader. I didn't think it had any other thing beyond that, but I don't know.
Man,
now.
It's eerie now knowing that Vader's castle was
just
there,
chilling.
Though.
Well, what would you rate this episode?
You know, I went into this episode thinking, oh, it's an intermission before the season finale, but I really enjoyed it, but it might be because I have not seen it in a while.
Yeah, same.
The pacing could a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
What would you rate it?
I have a 6.5.
Okay, I was going to say 6.
I don't know why I always put 0.5 to the end of my ratings.
I love how I always ask you first before I say mine, because I'm afraid.
Why are you afraid?
Like, what?
I get it. Star Wars fandom can be judgmental, but...
And divisive.
Yeah. We had a conversation about that earlier today.
But other kind of times, it could be lovely and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seeing all of the people on Twitter, like, I saw a couple things today where someone, like, made a costume piece for work. Seeing the action figures and all the love and, like, someone's room is entirely Star Wars. Like, just seeing all the, like... different ways it could be expressed and how much people care and love about it. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. Not the divisive crap. Not that stuff. You like what you like, I like what I like.
Yeah.
Just stay in your lane and don't make each other mad at each other. I can't believe... Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Sure, go ahead.
I cannot believe we're almost done with season one. I'm sad.
It's been a journey. It's been fun. Not the end by any means. But yeah, hopefully gonna have a physical... set done for the next episode.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do that for the finale, and hopefully in season two, you can listen to us respond on Spotify, or you can watch us on YouTube.
Yeah, probably be heavily edited with us kind of like ticking, moving around. Like,
well, I can put transitions,
cuts, and stuff because it's like, yeah, we can't clip everything we say into a podcast. 2-30 minutes is hard,
and we're very shy, so that's why it's taken us so long to. Do anything with video because we like to hide behind our mics.
Yes, we like to be fulcrums and you know coordinate from behind the scenes, but not be up.
I also find it symbolic that we're gonna see Fulcrum.
Oh yeah,
and then next episode you guys are gonna see what we look like.
Yeah,
interesting. Alrighty, well, anything else to add before we get to the last one of season one?
Nope. Except this has been fun.
It has, and I'm
we'll
sad.
We'll continue having fun.
Season one is over. I'm really looking forward to getting to the later seasons, because I've seen season one a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, even two I haven't seen in a while. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to go back and rewatch and find stuff that we didn't realize the first time.
Yeah.
Alrighty, you want to close this out? I've talked too much.
I've talked too much, too. Alrighty, guys. We'll see you in the next episode for the season one finale. Fire across the galaxy of Star Wars Rebels, and hopefully you'll be able to see us face to face in the next episode.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.